What's going on, guys? You're here with the Third Shift Nerds. You've got myself and, as always, my partner in crime, Eddie.
What's going on, boys and girls?
So tonight, we're actually going to be doing one of our favorite movies. We're going to take a little trip back in time, 1984. Make sure your time circuits are ready, because tonight we're doing the James Cameron classic.
The Terminator.
Jumping right into it, I love this movie.
As do I. It will always be my favorite sci-fi flick of all time.
Now, I mean, just the atmosphere of the movie alone, there's a reason that a lot of it was shot at night, because James Cameron thought that the movie would be better shot at night, and that the Terminator would be more menacing at night.
Well, yeah, but I mean, usually that's a tactic that they usually use in horror. And in this type of deal, there is a little bit of an element of horror in it. Because basically, Arnold himself just looks like a normal human being, but at the same time, because of his build and his height and just the way he moves, he's intimidating. But I think what really gives it that little speck of horror is when parts of him, he starts getting wounded to the point where it shows the machine underneath, and it's kind of like slowly seeing the monster in a horror movie. You see glimpses of it, but you never see it in its entirety. But when you see it in its entirety, you understand why Kyle Reese has been running the whole fucking movie.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of Kyle Reese, did you know that originally Arnold Schwarzenegger had went for the role of Kyle Reese? Yeah. And I can't think of his name.
Schwarzenegger?
No, who played Kyle Reese?
Oh, that's Michael Biehn.
Michael Biehn actually went for the Terminator, but James Cameron figured that they'd be better off opposite roles.
Well, yeah. Well, you had most people don't know that the special effects in this were done by Stan Winston Studios and Fantasy 2 Effects, and I guess the rig that they built for the full T-800 endoskeleton, which stood from foot to head, was the exact same height as Arnold and almost the exact same weight. Mm-hmm. So they're like, well, first off, this is what we got for our puppet. This is what we got for our menacing, fully unscathed villain. So basically, he's almost the exact same build as the Terminator, and they're like, you know, he's big and he's intimidating, so obviously he should play the Terminator.
That's just like... That's the other thing I like about this movie. You don't need to say a lot,
yeah,
to be a good villain.
Well, that's the thing. You don't need all these lines. Like, I know Schwarzenegger had about, what, 17 lines?
17 lines in the movie.
It was mostly just based on physicality and body chemistry, too. And just body language. And Arnold was just so fucking good at it. That's what I loved him about being the villain, is just because he was scary. He was intimidating. And, like, most people see off-camera, he's the nicest guy in the world, but when he played the Terminator, he played what the Terminator was, which was a soulless killing machine.
Yeah.
And that's the thing I loved about him. There's only one other time I've seen this, you know, bad guy, movie monster come after someone and just an unstoppable force of evil. I think Michael Myers was the first Terminator because he no matter what you did to the guy, he would get back up and he'd still keep coming for you. That's what I liked about Arnold is... And that's what made him scary. And that's what made him scary as a villain is because of his tenacity. The fact that he was kind of made to be indestructible, but you need like a proper type of weapon to get rid of him, and you can't really find that on the streets of Los Angeles.
So they did what they did best. They blew him up.
Yeah. Well, you got blown up. Well, he got blown up, and he got crushed by a metal press in the same night, so... Mm-hmm. I'm sitting here thinking, so a shotgun won't do anything for it, but apparently a pipe bomb can blow it in half, so I'm sitting there doing the physics, and you're thinking, this doesn't make a whole hell of a lot of sense, but the Terminators were meant to be... They were meant to be tough to kill. People always... I know they bitch about, you know, it's just like, oh, this would be hard to kill, that would be hard to kill, like aliens, mutants... Zombies. Well, the thing is, with Terminators, they're not made out of flesh and bone tissue. You need something a little bit better than what you have in 20th century America. And what they had at that time on the streets wasn't enough to take him out. And that's what made him scary, is because the weapons we need for him aren't going to exist for another 40 years. So imagine that coming after you. It's not just a hitman; it's a bionic killing machine. And it will continue to do what it does until it's fulfilled its mission. As we saw when it got blown in half and it was still coming after Sarah with one hand left.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, just the fact that it can adapt and improvise is interesting. And the fact that it has basic knowledge of human anatomy makes it an even more... What's the word I'm looking for? Viable killing machine.
Yeah.
Because it knows human anatomy. It knows, you know, where all the weak spots are. And these Terminators are programmed with that. And it's like, you know, when in the one scene where he's in the gun shop and he's listing off all the guns, you know, he's got to have rudimentary knowledge, at least about, you know, the firearms in the past.
Well, basic knowledge of the 20th century. That way, if you go in, there's no bugs that can get into the system. You're not going to find something he doesn't know about.
Mm-hmm.
But it's basic knowledge of the 20th century, which is, this is a lot more than you think it would be, even for a person. That Terminator has more knowledge about the 20th century, the people who have lived most of it. So it knows its way around, and it's got digital memory. It can literally pick things out of files if it needs to figure something out.
And the fact is these things can live for 150 years on a power cell.
Yeah, that's the thing I found interesting, is that they run out of nuclear battery, which, if you know, if compromised, as we saw in Terminator 3, has enough nuclear force to take down a small building. So that was another one I always wondered when I saw the Terminator get blown in half. I'm like, how did that? And I'm sitting there, I'm like, how did that battery not go?
Mm-hmm.
But
I mean, just overall, I love this movie. It actually won several special effects awards.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing I like about this. And everybody knows I'm a practical effects person. I love practical effects. And this, at the time, for a budget of $6 million, James Cameron worked a lot, like you said, with Stan Winston's school, and he also worked with ILM, George Lucas's company.
Mm-hmm.
And he did a lot of practical effects, like when the scene where the Terminator, you know, he's back in his apartment, and, you know, he's taking the razor blade, and he's kind of cutting, you know, his eye out.
Well, I think that's another thing I like about horror movies and sci-fi movies, because there's always going to be a little bit of gore, and
mm-hmm.
part of you doesn't believe it. Like, for the most part, you haven't seen anything that, you know, identifies him as a machine. So this was the part that not only was going to, you know, make you cringe and make your skin crawl,
mm-hmm.
but you're going to see, without a doubt, he is not human. And just watching that,
mm-hmm.
plops his eye out into the water, and I wish I could have been there to see people's expressions on their face. Just wipes out the blood, looks over, and you just see this red eye trying to focus, and it's just like, yep, he's not human.
But that whole scene right there was actually a special effects dummy that they rigged, yeah. you know. But I mean, obviously, because Arnold wasn't going to do that, but that was actually pretty cool. That, yeah, you can tell, you know, back in 1984, you know, it's practical effects. It's cheesy, but...
Well, in this case, they didn't have the visual effects that we needed at the time. So this was the best. Mm-hmm. This is the best case. However, I do think that the arm effect that they used was really good. As the part where Arnold had to dig into his arm, which was,
mm-hmm.
if you're not big into gore or bodily mutilation, you probably would have recoiled in horror watching mm-hmm. him dig into his arm with an X-Acto knife.
Oh dear God! And, or like the same scene in Terminator 2. Yeah, we'll get into that for that.
Well, he basically did that and just didn't clean his wounds, but he just made sure there was no obstruction to the servos mm-hmm. in his arm. So, and the other reason he had to cut that piece of his eye out is because it swelled up once it got hit with the buckshot.
Mm-hmm.
So he couldn't see. So he's going to be blind in one eye. So, and then comes the best part in the world, which I'm surprised if anyone saw him, they wouldn't ask this question. Why are you wearing sunglasses at night? Because he's hiding something he doesn't want you to see.
Exactly. And see, like, overall, I think this is a great movie. And the fact that, like I said, a lot of it was filmed at night just adds more to that feeling of, you know, it being intimidating and it being, you know, scary.
Yeah. Well, like I said, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Go ahead.
But it works, like I said, there's elements of horror in the Terminator, because the Terminator is basically... Most people, you'd watch a horror movie and you think, you know, it's like Cujo or Jaws, it's man against nature. But this one on one end of it is completely different, because it's not nature, it's invention. And that's what always fascinated me about this, is that we built the Terminators and Skynet to protect us, and in the end, have a super sentient intelligence is eventually going to become sentient, realize that we're the threat, they are not, and that's basically what takes place in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically like, it's like being in a crime syndicate and someone tells them that you've taken a hit on you. Well, you could still have the ability to kill that person because 9 times out of 10, it's human. Terminator doesn't go down basically whatever you throw at it. You need military hardware to at least make a dent.
Mm-hmm. And
that's basically I think why they did it at night.
Mm-hmm.
Is because they wanted to make it seem what it was an indestructible, like, not just machine, but just kind of like a man-made monster.
And I mean, he had one goal and one goal only: travel back to 1984, kill Sarah Connor before she could give birth to John Connor. And the one scene I like is he's flipping through the phone book and he's looking at all the Sarah Connors. Mm-hmm. And there's like 10 of them. So he's got the list in his head and he's going through. And as he kills each Sarah Connor, he's crossing it off, in his brain.
Right.
And everything.
Well, of course he's going to look through the phone book because Sarah Connor's a pretty common name. So mm-hmm. you're going to have to figure out how many people do I have to kill before I actually get the one I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And he took out a couple. Some poor lady opens her door and ends up with 6.45 slugs in her. And I was just like, I just felt bad for her. I really did.
Hey, but you got to think about it this way, though, too. He's got to be efficient.
Well, yeah. Well, he can't leave any loopholes.
Because
mm-hmm. if she lives by any means at all, she's gonna birth John and, fucking Skynet's mm-hmm. screwed.
Now, I like this movie because, like Ed said, Arnold only has like 17 lines of dialogue. But the fact is Linda Hamilton stole the movie as well. She was great. Michael Biehn was great in this. And just overall, I think it's a great movie. It's not something I'd show, like a 9-year-old.
Yeah.
But, when you're older and, you can handle stuff like that, I definitely recommend you watch Terminator.
I remember I would watch, I think around 13 or 14, I just went crazy for it. And that was the first place we went to. We went to Universal Studios that summer, was the T2 ride.
Mm-hmm.
Which was awesome. At the same time, I just remember going into the gift shop and just looking around me and I just want one of everything.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, when I was between, 13 and 14, I really got into it, and I watched The Terminator, basically the edited-for-TV version, over and over and over again. And the thing I liked about this is that it's an origin story of how everything goes, and you see Sarah Connor not as the badass she eventually becomes, but you see her as this kind of just out of it, unknowledgeable, just, thrown into the fray mm-hmm. of things. She doesn't know that this is going to happen. She's at a point where she's still very young and she's still trying to just keep her life on track. Finds out that there's a bionic assassin that just came back from the future and wants to kill her.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and you have this, and you feel a sympathy for her. You watch this and it's like you having a bad day and someone telling you, oh yeah, by the way, life-threatening situation, and go.
Mm-hmm. And the one thing that I really liked about this was Kyle Reese's description of the Terminator. And I mean,
he was vivid. He was very vivid.
Mm-hmm.
The way he describes everything. And that's the thing. You never get to see this future. You get to see the futuristic world, like little snippets of it.
Mm-hmm.
But at least when you first get a sense of where he's from, I think he describes it very accurately, and he makes it sound like it is. It's a terrifying apocalyptic state where man is no longer in control. Machines have basically become the tyranny of the future.
Mm-hmm.
Man's obsessive act of always having the upper hand and always being always having something to deal with security.
So it's like the predator becomes the prey.
Yeah, pretty much.
I found it here. I had to look it up. And this is Kyle Reese. Just listen to this. It says, listen and understand. The Terminator is out there. It can't be bargained with. It can't be reasoned with. It doesn't feel pity or remorse or fear. And will absolutely never stop ever until you are dead. And I mean, just thinking about that, knowing, a little bit of background we have on Kyle Reese, he's from the future. He fought these Terminators.
Well, he lives in a world where he told she asked him, what's your world like? And he's just like, just all of this is gone.
Mm-hmm.
He makes her believe that that everything you see before you right now mm-hmm. is nothing but rubble when I was born. Mm-hmm. He's not only been fighting this war, he's grown up mm-hmm. in it.
And, you know, he's describing the Terminators in the future. He said the 700 series, you know, we were able to detect, you know, because they had rubber skin. These new ones, they look human, they could pass human, bad breath, they can grow hair, they can age, their skin can age. He said they're indistinguishable from a human. So that's why in the beginning of the movie, you know, you see them whenever they're out on patrols or anytime yeah. they're in their safe houses, they always have dogs with them because dogs can tell the difference between a human and a Terminator. And just him describing that and the way he described it sends chills down your spine because it's like he's not just, you know, saying it. He's telling her what he's seen.
Well, it's the same thing as the cycle, like in every other, like again, once again, the horror element. Like in like many horror movies, when you see dogs or cats, they usually hiss or bark at something that you believe and you know in the storyline is evil. Mm-hmm. There's nothing human about it, and that's how dogs would figure it out because they know the difference between an actual human mm-hmm. and that's something that looks like a human, but something's not right.
Mm-hmm. I'd have to say one of my favorite scenes in this is when Arnold's character, when the Terminator first comes back, you know, and he's out taking a nice walk, and Bill Paxton's like, "Nice night for a walk, huh?"
Yeah.
And he just kills them all and takes their clothes.
Yeah, I mean, as far as Arnold goes, I don't know how cold it was out that night. But yeah, they're just like, and that's the thing is like people are like, why is the Terminator naked? And it's like nothing dead apparently will go in this relapsed time machine that mm-hmm. they use.
So nothing basically, metal.
Well, yeah, nothing that wasn't living tissue, and that's how Skynet decided to fool the machine is wrapping him in living human tissue or genetically modified human tissue. That way it would go through, but anything that wasn't living, like clothes or you know, mm-hmm. Like clothes. They're not gonna stay with him. So not only did he have to go back in time, he had to kill somebody right from the get-go, get their clothes, get himself a ride, and you know, get everything done as quick as possible.
I mean, it's not like Terminator 2. It's like, I need your clothes, your boots, and your motorcycle.
He didn't ask him. Well, he asked him for it, and he was just like, they pulled a knife. They said, "Fuck you, asshole." He knocked two of them off. He took his arm, put it through one of them. Ripped something out of him, mm-hmm. dropped to the ground, and his whole forearm's covered with blood. Mm-hmm. And the last guy's just cowering up against the bars, just hands over his jacket.
Yeah. We'll save that discussion for Terminator 2.
Yeah.
No, just overall, I think it's a great movie. It's got a great atmosphere to it.
Well, yeah, it was mostly... sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Oh, hey.
But it was shot in Los Angeles. A lot of it was shot in Los Angeles, mm-hmm. different points of California. Because you know that's where we are is in Los Angeles. There was a certain tunnel that it drove through during the chase sequence,
mm-hmm.
and I could swear I saw the exact same stretch, of road
mm-hmm.
in RoboCop when he was driving. Almost, I swear, almost identical to it. But yeah, that's. I'm trying to think of my favorite part from the. From the movie would have to be when Arnold basically just he comes to the police precinct. He asks where Sarah Connor is, and the snippy desk clerk basically says, "You know, if you want to wait, there's a bench over there." Comes back in, but doesn't come back in by himself. Puts a car through the front of the office. Comes in, you know, with guns blazing. He's just like, "You know what? If you're not going to let me see her, I'm just going to wade through all of you motherfuckers mm-hmm. before I find her." And he did. He killed 17 cops. One machine killed 17 cops in like the span of 10 minutes.
And here's another thing. The actual chassis and head for the Terminator, they made two versions of that. One that was more mobile and one that was stationary. And that thing weighed like 800 pounds because it was pure metal.
Well, yeah, back then they didn't. Like what they did with the Terminators of like the most... The most recent movie for Genesis was they would make plastic molds of the Terminators, and they would spray paint them chrome to make them look like steel so they were easier to move. These ones, they did not have the luxury of doing that here. They had one that was wired to a backpack during some of the shoots in the in the factory.
Mm-hmm.
So there'd be one of the engineers down there wearing a backpack and with the Terminator over his head, you know, controlling him from down under just from that. But the full scale Terminator, the full like head to toe Terminator, was the exact same mm-hmm. height and almost the same weight as Arnold, was, yep. which was 6'2", 200 pounds. Mm-hmm. And this thing was big and bulky. So I'm pretty sure if I had the choice to choose between Arnold and Michael, I would still choose Arnold because he still represents physically. He still represents the Terminator better, and you can picture. What would be, you know, is Arnold is in this, as this mean machine, and you can picture what's underneath it.
And did you know that there was actually some stop motion done as well for the movie?
Yeah, like I said, our digital effects weren't mm-hmm. like anywhere near that time. Well, we still had a few, but there's certain times that they used mm-hmm. it. They did one where the Terminator was chasing them at the. At the factory, mm-hmm. and they did that on like I think it was an 18-inch figure on a small
mm-hmm.
stop scale set, and they shot it, and they shot it in the factory, mm-hmm. but they shot it at an angle to make it look like he was coming toward him.
Mm-hmm.
And there was another one where he's driving that big tanker semi, and it blows up. Well, they were shooting in most of Los Angeles and California. There's no place they could do that safely without going out into the desert. So they did a small scale mm-hmm. explosion, and they somehow cropped that in, and mm-hmm. you couldn't tell the difference.
Well, here's something interesting I found. The film relied heavily on the use of miniatures, like you were just saying, for the Terminator in the factory. The shot of the skulls being crushed by the tank in the opening scene. The skulls were actually about the size of marbles. And what they'd do is they'd take the camera and they'd zoom it in, and then they'd have the truck drive over it, so it's crushing it. The famous tanker truck explosion, you know which one I'm talking yeah. about? 42 separate explosions in a model truck that were a foot and a half long and 8 feet long. So that means that they would have 42 of them, they'd boom. Blow it up at this scene, go on to the next one, blow this part of the truck up, then blow this part of the truck up, yeah. and then et cetera, all the way down.
Well, there's not, like I said, there's no place within, this place mm-hmm. dealt heavily in the city and around Los Angeles. There's no way you could set up a full scale without someone getting hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Or something going, you know, something going tits up.
Mm-hmm. The other reason that this was filmed at night is because Arnold was also working on the Conan movie.
Yeah, I think the next Conan yep. movie.
And they said, well, we'll allow you to use him, but you have to work around our schedule. And, you know, James Cameron filmed at night, you know, to save budget costs and everything, which was good for him, on a budget of $6 million.
Which isn't much for, mm-hmm. like, yeah. today's standards, it's not much for an action movie.
But, you know, at the same, you know, that's the other reason they filmed at night, because Arnold was only available at night. Any of the day shots yeah. that they did during the day, like him killing one of the Sarah Connors, they had to do, like, all of his day shots they had to do in one day. So he'd have to get up at, like, 7 o'clock in the morning, and he filmed from, like, 7 a.m. to, like, 6:30, 7 o'clock p.m., and they had to film all his stuff in one day. Because he had, I guess, one day that they weren't filming on set. James Cameron said, all right, this is the only day we had to do this during the day. Let's get it done.
Well, yeah, I kind of look at the whole, you know, having to shoot at night thing is the same way as the shark not working in Jaws.
Mm-hmm.
It only gave better suspense to the monster. If anything, it gave it, there was more intensity. You were more scared by mm-hmm. it. Because the Terminator, which many of the fans know, has infrared, which means it can see in the dark. Human beings can't do that. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter how far in the ground, how dark of a hole you're in, he'll find you.
The other thing here on my notes that I have, it says, Cameron did most of the filming at night to keep production costs down, as we said, favoring dim streetlights with mercury-vapored lamps to reduce the need to bring in expensive lighting equipment, and it also set the mood for the Terminator. So that's the other thing we were saying about filming at night. He thought the dim lights, you know, would make the Terminator more menacing. And, like, my other favorite scene in this is, and I don't condone this in any way, but, you know, when he's in the police station and he's talking, he's like, I'm a friend of Sarah Connor's, is she available? You go, the cop's like, you know, she's taking a statement, and I'm doing all this from memory, by the way. And he, you know, you see Arnold looking around, and you can tell that the Terminator's, you know, scanning the infrastructure of the booth. And he looks at him, and he says his infamous or his famous word, "I'll be back." And you see Arnold walk out of scene, and maybe a minute later, you just see the desk clerk look up, and you just see the car come at him.
And you see the headlights, and then it's just like, well, and that worked out nicely.
And I mean, you know, just for him to go through that police station and just mow down all those cops, which I don't approve of, by the way, you know, just him not saying a word, that's menacing.
It is menacing. Well, he doesn't speak usually unless he has to. And, yeah, it takes out 7 police officers within a span of maybe, I don't know, 5-10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
He kills an entire apartment, and he still misses them getting him out of there. Like, they take off in a hatchback, and he doesn't so much as get a couple of hits off on him. And he just, you expect him to react or get mad, and he just realizes his gun just jammed, looked back down, and then just hops over the fence and just starts walking.
Do you know how the idea of the Terminator actually came to be?
How's that?
While in Rome for the release of Piranha 2, The Spawning, James Cameron fell ill and had a fever-inducing dream in his hotel room featuring this metal death figure coming from a fire. The implication was that he had been stripped of its skin by the fire and exposed for what it really was.
It was dehumanization. Yeah,
the dream attached to a long-term germination of sci-fi ideas, because he'd always been a sci-fi fan, and he's like, I always wanted to do some sort of really definitive robot story, and that's how Terminator came to be. And he actually wrote the script for Terminator in 30 days.
Well, I can see that, and it's just like when you have production costs that were down, but then again, at this time, they didn't give Cameron a lot of money, because Cameron was still very much unknown at the time. They gave him $6 million, and they're like, this is all you're getting from us, make it last. Mm-hmm. And it ended up grossing $38,400,000 in the U.S.,
mm-hmm.
and it was $40 million worldwide. Mm-hmm. So I think for $6 million, you definitely got... And for those numbers nowadays, that's not much.
Well, I mean,
but back then...
Yeah. Now you have to adjust for inflation, but, you know, back then, you know, with a $6 million budget, that's a lot of... You know, that's almost 4 times its budget.
Yeah, and... The thing is, the reason he kept costs low was not just, you know, for artistic purposes. Like I said, he didn't have the money, so he had to find a way to work. He had to find a way to work around it. Because after everything that got paid of all the stunt work, all of the production,
mm-hmm.
you know, everything you could think of, there's always going to be something else that pops up. You're going to mm-hmm. need more money. Yeah. And somehow Cameron, being the wizard-like filmmaker he is... found a way around it.
Mm-hmm.
He found cut cost ways to get around something without having to spend a bunch of money or make it look cheesy.
Mm-hmm.
And he was great at it. Like, there was a scene where they had to do a shot of Arnold on top of the car trying to get through the windshield.
Mm-hmm.
The insurance company said, we can't do that. We can't allow you to do that. We won't pay, mm-hmm. you know, we won't
cover it.
We won't cover you if something happens. If what happens yeah. to him. So basically, what they did is they put him on the car. And the car was perfectly stationary, and they were moving the background behind him,
yeah.
like a loop,
mm-hmm.
to make it look as though. And I'm just like, you can do like nowadays. You wouldn't have to worry about doing something like that. But mm-hmm. back then, you had to have certain ingenuity to make a movie work, especially if you were on a fixed budget like he was.
Oh yeah. And, I mean, he actually came in under budget. He had about $750,000 left, you know, after the movie was filmed. But the thing that I like about this, I was reading here, where was it? Oh, most of the special effects were done in-house, that is, with no post-production tricks or digital manipulation, along with the stop-motion photography to animate a limping T-800. I actually saw the behind-the-scenes footage of this, and when they were creating it. And what they would do is, you know, when the Terminator's in the factory and it's kind of limping up the stairs,
yeah.
what they'd do is they'd stop it here. They'd say, okay, they'd film it, and then they'd move it a little bit, film it. So, yeah, that entire scene of him getting up the stairs for Sarah Connor was all stop motion.
Well, some of it, like, going through the theater like that, and mm-hmm. some of it, when you see you would see the Terminator walking up, part of it was just some guy... with stilts underneath stilts for the feet, mm-hmm. and then another guy wearing a backpack going up the stairs, and they would shoot mm-hmm. from behind the skull mm-hmm. of the Terminator, but they would shoot it at an angle so you didn't see. So it literally appeared like he was coming up the stairs to get him. Mm-hmm. And this is before you had any. This was a heavy puppet to operate. Mm-hmm. This is. It's one of the best. Mm-hmm. It's one of the best effects I've ever seen.
And see that's the whole thing too. With they built a whole Terminator like you were saying, and they built one like to chassis yeah. up. So like you were saying, that shot where you see him, you see the camera behind the Terminator. Like Ed said, there was somebody there moving that head like with a backpack. Yeah. That was just the chassis and the head.
Yeah, that's what you would have strapped to you. Mm-hmm. I found out they spent $1 million alone on the practical effects for the Terminator.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it cost close to that just for the one that stood from head to toe. There were other ones like the half track Andy was talking mm-hmm. about. All of that was done on. I know the machinery doesn't look as smooth as it would now, mm-hmm. but back then, that's what I loved about near the late 20th century is that practical effects mm-hmm. usually would fit mm-hmm. the bill. Especially, you would have to because you wouldn't have any digital effect, anything digital that you could put in that would save face.
And that, this movie being 35 years old,
yeah.
And can you believe that? 1984. Nowadays, it still stands up.
Yeah. Well, there's going to be arguments over the, over the special effects, but they say the same thing about Jaws. They say mm-hmm. the same thing about the Alien movies, Mm-hmm. And I think that's what they do at a moment in time is we want to make this as well as we can for what we have.
Terminator, and I'm reading this here, was actually ranked in the top 10 best sci-fi movies of all time.
Yeah, it was. Well, the thing is, during the 80s, it was an explosion of technology is when we really got big into it. And it just went ahead into the 90s and 2000s and, mm-hmm. Right where we are now. And it's... Not only was it sci-fi, but it kind of had it had the element of a horror movie. It's just like, what happened if the technology we use to fuel our lives and to operate everything around us came back at us to kill us? Kind of like Maximum Overdrive.
Mm-hmm.
But that didn't come out until years later, so James Cameron came up with a great idea, and he literally wanted a technological version of death coming for you. And I don't know who came up with the stats on the Terminator or the design mm-hmm. on it, but they did their job 110%. Every time I see this thing, I'm terrified of it. You get to see the stop motion animation of it trying to pull its way out of the wreckage mm-hmm. and just, it doesn't stop. It keeps going. You could chop off legs. You can mm-hmm. chop off arms. It's going to find a way. It's going to find a way to fulfill its mission.
Did you know that Arnold Schwarzenegger is Terminator is also in the top 100 for best heroes and villains?
Yeah.
Having already nailed his performance as the near-silent exterminator in the first Terminator, Schwarzenegger returned with more acting experience under his belt. Terminator 2 allowed Schwarzenegger to deliver an impressive performance as a cyborg trying to understand what it's like to be human and taught by John Connor.
Yeah.
So he was, in the top... 100 villains of all time in the first one, and mm-hmm. in the second one, top 100. He was listed in the top 100 heroes of all time.
But I think I always love him better as the villain because mm-hmm. he's pretty much the same. He's almost the same as someone compared it to a slasher movie. Just this big ominous figure that doesn't mm-hmm. that does nothing but kill. No rhyme or reason for it, as far as the mm-hmm. victims are concerned. Mm-hmm. And this one, it's not like you can kill a man and you can kill a beast, but you can't kill something that isn't alive to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's the same thing with the Terminator. Is this thing has no emotion. It mm-hmm. doesn't feel pain. It doesn't feel anything. It operates like any other machine. It gets mm-hmm. programmed and it does what it's programmed to do.
Now, here's my other question then. What happens to the Terminator after it successfully carries out its mission. Does it just sit around and wait for Judgment Day to happen?
Yeah, just go into like a bunker or something, sit down there, and just shut itself down and wait for the end of the world?
I mean, that's something that I would love to have seen. You know, it's like, okay, you know, it goes back to the future. Like, it has a thing, like, it could hit a button and it goes back to the future as, you know, with all the skin and everything intact, or does it shut down? Does it commit suicide?
I would think that it would either... My best guess would be it would find a place to shut down and just, mm-hmm. you know, stay dormant until, you know, the war mm-hmm. escalates. Or it have, like, some kind of a self-destruct mechanism. Yeah. Or there's, like, something you could do, or it had to have a setting in its applications where all mm-hmm. it had to do was just... All it had to do was just, like, click on a function, and that atomic battery would willingly compromise itself, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. you're not going to find anything if you're lucky, which mm-hmm. You can thank Miles Dyson and Cyberdyne Systems for that. Yeah.
But we'll get into that for Terminator 2. If you had to pick one scene that would you say is your favorite scene in the entire movie, what would you say it was?
I would either have to say it'd probably be the raid on the police precinct would either be my favorite, or I think towards the ending where they're being chased by him in the fuel tanker.
Mm-hmm.
And you literally get to see you... that's the people... They are in disbelief because they look at Arnold and all they see is a human being. And for the most part, you don't really get to see... Your mind doesn't really get to see and comprehend what's going on until... He's in the bathroom and he has to cut that part of that mm-hmm. flesh off his face, and you see the eye, and some people aren't even disbelief of the eye,
mm-hmm.
and he gets hit by the truck, all this flesh is torn off his face, and underneath mm-hmm. you could see all the mechanical mm-hmm. body underneath, and you see him driving a truck towards you, and half the time you look over Sarah's shoulder and you can see the eye pointing right at her, you can see that red glowing mm-hmm. eye. So it was all about intimidation, and you see him get out of the truck just on fire, falls down. They think that's it, and I'm sitting there like, no, that ain't it. You don't go through all of this just to give up. And the next thing you know, you don't have to worry about questioning what he looks like underneath, because that fucking, just the scariest machine or android you could imagine just stands up out of that fire, and it's just like... You know, it was a nice try, but yeah, I'm still going, you know?
I would have to say my favorite part in this movie is the scene where you're talking about, where he emerges from the truck, yeah. and he's just pure Terminator.
Yeah, there's...
Because, like, you see him, and he's so menacing to begin with, and then, you know, he emerges from the truck, and it's pure Terminator at this yeah. point. And that's just intimidating, because, you know, you're looking at it, and it's like, oh my God, Kyle Reese was right. This yeah. thing is a machine.
There's nothing human about it at all.
And just looking at it, I thought that was cool. You know, that's my favorite part. You know, when he comes out, you know, he gets out of the truck, and it's just pure Terminator. And the first time I saw it, I was in awe. I was like, so that's what the Terminator really looks like. Holy crap.
It's basically, that's what it is. It's bionic death, and what better to take out bionic death than an android skeleton?
Mm-hmm.
But there was that, and the one thing that I always felt that it had elements of horror in it was the score of the movie that was done by Brad Fidel.
Mm-hmm.
And I listened to the score when I wasn't watching the movie, and the music is fucking terrifying.
Yes.
And the metallic sounds that it makes, it's his way of saying, you know, certain parts of the movie, you know, the Terminator's there. It's kind of like mm-hmm. creeping after you, like the mm-hmm. Halloween theme. Yeah. It's like, you know, the bad guy is here. You better run for your life.
See, and the other thing is this does what Halloween does. And I call this the villain view. Yeah. Kind of like, you know, if you watch Halloween, you know, you can tell that the movie's being told through Michael Myers' eyes.
Yeah.
That's the same thing with this. The movie's being told from the viewpoint, when the Terminator's on screen, of the Terminator. And, like, when Kyle Reese and Sarah Connor are there, it's being told from their viewpoint. But, like you said, the music is what makes the movie as well as the atmosphere. Because you can have a great-looking movie, but if you have a crappy soundtrack, mm. it's not going to put you in that mood of yeah. menacing and awe well, and just...
It's like, it's like when John Carpenter said when we didn't score the movie first. When we edited it all together and had the finished project, we played it without the music and it was just dull as dirt. Mm-hmm. We put in that bongo music mm-hmm. that he learned, or that bongo tempo that he learned, and it made all the difference. Mm-hmm. And all the metallic sounds and noises and all the techno beats that they use in the soundtrack goes along perfectly with it. There's just there's one point where you see him looking around, and there's just this voice of dun 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 dun, dun 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 dun, dun 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 dun, and it's just like it's evil, but it's not like classic evil.
I was just looking something up here online, and the original Terminator soundtrack was actually listed as one of the top 100 best movie soundtracks of all time.
Well, that's the thing. What a soundtrack's supposed to do is supposed to complement a movie. Mm-hmm. They did it for Star Wars. They did it for The Godfather. God only knows what. If you don't have a proper soundtrack, it's not going to pull off well for the movie. You want something that gets exactly what you want. That's going to build toward what you want the audience to feel.
Was there anything else you wanted to cover in your notes here, real quick?
Let's have a look here. There was another extra in this who actually passed away a few years ago, named Dick Miller. He was an actor you've seen in many movies. You may remember him as Mr. Futterman from Gremlins and Gremlins 2.
Wasn't he the gun dealer in the gun shop?
He was the gun dealer. He passed away on January 30th, 2019. He was 90 years old. Mm. He had one hell of a career behind him. He had more credits behind him than I think many, like, you know, big listers. Because he took small parts for the most part. And I always felt bad for him because, you know, he just basically told the Terminator, you can't do that. And he just, like, wrong and just blew him away. But from what I heard, he was a great actor, sweet person. You know, rest in peace, Dick. All I always remember is Mr. Futterman, or the poor guy that had the balls to tell the Terminator no.
That's the other scene that I like. I mean, I don't like that he gets killed, but he's like, Uzi 9mm, and he goes, "You really know your guns." He goes, "Is there anything else?" He goes, "Face plasma rifle within a 30-watt range." He goes, "Hey, pal, just what you see here."
Well, the Terminator might as well ask, but, you know, this is, like I said, it's 20th century weaponry, and the thing is, the weapons he had gotten weren't automatic. He actually, I found out in the novelization, that the Terminator actually had to convert them from semi-auto to full-auto. Mm-hmm. He had to sit down and actually do it, and I'm like, to think of the amount of intelligence this one machine has to do this one objective is incredible.
Apparently, from what I was reading in my notes, Michael Biehn, when... The scene where he's like cutting the stock and the barrel off of the shotgun. Apparently, when Michael Biehn did that, he dislocated his shoulder because the kickback from the rifle. He didn't realize that it had such a kickback, so he dislocated his shoulder. So he had to be out for filming for a couple of days while they took care of that. But I mean, you know, just even the geniusness of. You know, Kyle Reese on that, he comes back, okay, he finds a gun, you know, and he's doing everything he can to stop the Terminator.
Yeah.
So...
Well, which isn't, like I said, this is 20th century, so the weapons that they have aren't going to be invented for another 40 years. Mm-hmm. Or around that time, and, like, they come up with all logical explanations. It's like she watches a man get shot 6 times with 12 gauge buckshot and just gets up like he felt like he was a kid falling down on the playground. And then they're just like, oh, well, what happened when he punched through the windshield? Oh, he was on drugs. Oh, what happens when he got shot? Oh, he was wearing body armor. I'm like, you do not get hit with 12 gauge ammunition repeatedly and get up, because even with flak jackets and armored vests, once you take the first hit, the rest of it becomes compromised. And if you take more than one, you still wear a vest. It gives you a better chance of saving your life, but it doesn't always do the job. You can't take as many hits as Arnold did, even with body armor, without getting up like you were perfectly fine.
And we all know what happens to body armor after it gets compromised the first time. Alex Murphy in RoboCop.
That's true.
So... But that being said, we're going to go ahead and wrap up. This is going to be part of our twofer for Terminator. So basically, we're going to do this one, and we're going to do Terminator 2 later down the road.
Oh, yeah.
But we're not going to do Terminator 3. We're not going to do Salvation. We're not going to do Genesis, just because... Why?
Kind of lost its way. I will always love different parts of it. Like in Salvation, mm-hmm. I loved seeing, you know... I loved seeing the future, the dystopian future mm-hmm. that they talked about. And I loved... And I loved just watching them deal with it in their own mm-hmm. time. Because after... You would get glimpses of mm-hmm. it in the first two movies, but people wanted to see yeah. more.
Now, we may do Terminator Dark Fate, depending on how that is.
Well, that's what we're doing. We're keeping our fingers crossed. They brought back Linda Hamilton...
They brought back Arnold. James Cameron actually wrote this one, and he's helping direct. So.
He wrote, and he produced too. Mm-hmm. So he was. So they're getting the their material like straight from the source.
Mm-hmm.
So there shouldn't be. Apparently he trusts the director and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
And if anybody's going to tell you, it's like when. Erwin Kirshner was directing the last two Star Wars. George Lucas may have not have been directing, but he was the consultant,
mm-hmm.
like basically the second in command the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
George Lucas said after he did the first Star Wars, it almost nearly killed him. That's why he brought in Erwin Kirshner. And this guy's got a shot at doing it. And he says, you know, if I screw it up, it's gonna, you know, mm-hmm. it's gonna end up being like the first three. Mm-hmm. It's going to be the worst of the sequels after that. So he's just like, the best way I could go about this is to find Cameron and bring mm-hmm. him in on the new project.
Well, that and, you know, I mean, I think it turned out well. You know, Michael Biehn, I don't think would have been an intimidating enough Terminator. And I don't think Arnold Schwarzenegger would have been a good enough Kyle Reese. But in an alternate reality, maybe that would have worked out. You never know. Here's a did you know for you. Did you know that in the director's cut of Terminator 2, Michael Biehn was actually in it as Kyle Reese?
Oh, yeah. There's a point where she sits down with him and she's talking to him, and it's just mm-hmm. like, well, guess what? It's a dream sequence because Kyle's dead.
Yeah.
He's been dead for a few years by now.
Yeah, but I thought that was interesting, you know, that they would just bring that back for, bring him back for Terminator 2. But we'll get into that when we discuss Terminator 2. Now, I know this is going to shock you. I rarely give movies a 5 out of 5.
Mm.
But this one, I got to give a 5 out of 5. Great practical effects, great atmosphere, great acting by Arnold Schwarzenegger, even though he only had 12 to 17 lines of dialogue. Great performance by Linda Hamilton. Great performance by Michael Biehn. And it was directed awesomely by James Cameron.
Well,
I loved it.
Yeah, he did what he didn't compromise in the quality of the movie, even though, you know, he had restrictions on the budget. He found ways around things, and he did it well. And he's still been a respected director, and I think Hollywood community. And like, even though some people are like, after Terminator 2, he kind of disappeared from the franchise, and people were like, well, you can't have Terminator without James Cameron. That's mm-hmm. his baby. That's what he came up with.
Yeah, I mean, I give it a 5 out of 5, and that's rare for me. What would you say out of 5?
Oh, I'd definitely say a 5 out of 5.
5 out of 5. Well, that being said, we're going to go ahead and wrap up here. We definitely appreciate you guys listening, and we'll be back soon with another podcast for you. Until then, stay classy, America.
All right. Live from New York, it's Saturday night.